Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, Text Number 33. Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. Ata duragatam kori Kauravam vira anturam Sanirvacharinam Prachatsvanagrim praye Ata Thus duragatam Having accompanied him for a long distance, Chori, Lord Krishna, Kurvan, the Pandavas, Virahataran, overwhelmed by a sense of separation, Sanivaracha, politely persuaded, Dridham, determined, Snigdhan, full of affection, Prayat proceeded Svanagrim towards his own city Dwarka Prayai with dear companions. Translation: out of profound affection for Lord Krishna, the Pandavas, who were of the Kuru dynasty, accompanied him a considerable distance to see him off. They were overwhelmed with the thought of future separation. The Lord, however, persuaded them to return home, and he proceeded towards Dwarka with his dear companions. Text 34 and 35. Guru Jangala Panchalam Shurasinam Sayamunam Paramavattam Kurukshetram Matsyam Sarasvatam Natham Rudangam Matikramya Suvir Birhayo Paran Anattan Bharagavo Pagat Achantavaho Managubu. O Sena, the Lord then proceeded towards Kuru Jangala, Panchala, Shurasena, the land on the bank of the river Jamuna, Brahmavarta, Kurukshetra, Matsya, Sarasvata, the province of the desert and the land of scanty water. After crossing these provinces, he gradually reached the Survira and Abira provinces, then west of these reached Dwarka at last. By his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The provinces passed over by the Lord in those days were differently named, but the direction given is sufficient to indicate that he travelled through Delhi, Punjab, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, Saurashtra and Gujarat, and at last reached his home province in Dwarka. We do not gain any profit simply by researching the analogous provinces of those days up to now, but it appears that the desert of Rajasthan and the provinces of scanty water like Madhya Pradesh were present even 5,000 years ago. The theory of soil experts that the desert developed in recent years is not supported by the statements of Bhagavatam. We may leave the matter for expert geologists to research, because a changing universe has different phases of geological development. We are satisfied that the Lord has now reached his own province, Dwarka Dham. From the Kuru provinces, Kurukshetra continues to exist since the Vedic age, and it is sheer foolishness when interpreters ignore or deny the existence of Kurukshetra. So, here we see in this purport by Srila Prabhupada, here describing the journey of Krishna to Dwarka, and some of the details are given. And Srila Prabhupada always takes every opportunity to defeat the atheistic persons and the mental speculators. Here, you know, just what would appear to be a minor point, is describing here that, you know, there were desert lands and lands of scanty water, and Srila Prabhupada points out that the theory of the soil experts that the desert developed in recent years is not supported by the statements of Bhagavatam. So, immediately Srila Prabhupada will very soundly smash the any statements of the non-devotees. He doesn't really allow them to get away with anything. and of course, you know, we're very, very fortunate to have such an acharya who can see everything properly in its proper perspective. We chant that mantra, Om Gyan Tirananjasa Gyananjana Salakya Chakshuram Vidhitam Yina Tasma Shi Yudhavayin Maham. That the, you know, we are born into the darkness of ignorance, and the spiritual master very kindly opened our eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. That is the position of everyone in the material world, that we're actually in darkness, and our eyes, what we see with our eyes, it is actually always imperfect, and we depend upon someone who can actually see things as they are. With our eyes, everything we see is defective. For instance, today, if we look up in the sky, although the sky is filled with stars and planets, we will not see any of them, because our eyes only operate under certain conditions. We take it for granted that our eyes will just, if we look at something, we'll just immediately see that. If we're looking hard enough and examine it, we can see. So this, of course, is the soil here. Prabhupada says the soil experts, and so many persons like that. They feel that if they just examine everything, grain by grain, layer by layer, that they will be able to see, things. They'll be able to see even. So here, of course, as Prabhupada points out, even though, if you ask the soil experts many different questions on, the state of affairs, even a week ago, there is some that they will struggle to, have a clear picture of, what's happening even a week ago. But if you ask them what happened, 5,000 years ago, they will tell you, oh yes, we have our textbooks, and we have so much knowledge about this. Of course, this is all nonsense, and from the perspective of the devotees, we see that the whole world is completely bewildered by so-called scientific advancement, which is, nothing but a whole lot of lies, misinformation, and bewilderment, and ignorance and illusion. But people take it as scientific knowledge. At the moment, the scientists have from NASA have sent their probe to Mars. I think it's supposed to have landed, and they're patting themselves on the back, and they they're convinced that by examining the photos that will come back from millions of miles away, that they will be able to trace out, they will be able to see and understand what happened at the very, very beginning of creation, which is billions and billions of years ago, that they feel that if they examine some of the dust on Mars that was seen, that they will see, now we can understand what happened billions and billions of years ago. And of course they have their theories. So they will present their theories, and these theories are presented as knowledge in our schools. So although, if you ask the scientists that what do you know for certain, the answer will be zero. As if you ask them what do you know for certain about the creation of the universe, they have textbooks full of theories, but actually as far as one statement of fact, there's none. They have so many theories. We believe and we feel that if we, we believe it is this, and we're trying to prove that it is this. In other words, we're trying to prove that it's not Krishna. We're trying to prove that it is anything but Krishna. Now, the scientists are spending, I think it's $2.5 billion, to collect some photos, a bit of dust, what have you, from Mars. And it's $2.5 billion. It's a lot. $2.5 billion. Just try and wrap your head around that. That's a lot of money for a bit of dust, a few pictures. Imagine you take your photo, you're showing some of the photo. Oh, a lovely photo. How much that cost you? $2.5 billion, that photo. Yeah. Practically, that would run a nation for a year. $2.5 billion. That's a lot of money. So much wastage. So much waste. but there, even to this very day, we're still spending money on the dust from the moon. They actually have because when the dust, so-called dust from the moon, came back, they distributed some to different dignitaries around the world. What happened was they gave it to their relatives, and other people stole it and what have you. So it costs them something like so many $1 million a year. They have like a special moon dust police force. It's serious. And they try and, because if you have a handful of moon dust, it itself is worth millions of dollars. So it's a very valuable commodity. So they try and they spend millions of dollars trying to work out where this dust has gone. You have to check out people's vacuum cleaners. Anyway, massive amounts of money. All of this, of course, as Prabhupada points out, is based upon one single misunderstanding. This whole endeavor is based upon the fact that they cannot understand that they are not the body. So, because they cannot take the trouble to meditate on one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Dehena Shmin Yata Dehe Komanam Yopanam Jira Yata Deham Jira Prabhati Yajira Stachan Yajira. One verse, they can buy the book, it's about $5 or $10, you can buy Bhagavad Gita, You sit down, you meditate upon it, and you apply your intelligence and understand, okay, I am not this body, but there is a non-changing, conscious being which has nothing to do with the material body, which is a spirit soul. So there is spirit and there is matter. The nature of spirit is that it does not change. It remains permanent. So of course, that in itself is the solution to the very core beginning of creation. See? Because the scientists have the difficulty that if you go back in the beginning, they're trying to understand that there must have been something in the beginning, which then, from that something, everything manifested. Now, the difficulty with their theory is that where did that something come from? So, no matter, you know, that they go back to a certain point, you know, they say, oh, they come from the gases, you know, and then there was the chunk, and then there was the big bang, you know, big explosion. Again, you know, if there's a big explosion, for instance, you know, if we heard a big explosion now, we'd probably assume that something, you know, we'd be hearing police, ambulance, fire brigade, and so many people would come and they would look and say, what caused that big explosion? Because it didn't happen by accident. It didn't, you know, it just wasn't that it just happened. There was no cause. They would examine that, you know, big explosion. But, you know, the Big Bang theory is based upon the fact that there was no cause. It just happened. But anyway, no matter how far they get back, if they get back to these gases and this and various elements, then we still have to ask the question, so where did those elements come from? And the fact that those elements must have come from somewhere, Srila Prabhupada says, that proves that Krishna exists. Right? So you actually have to get back to a point where something is there, because you can't get back to a point where there's nothing. Right? You can't get back to the point at the very beginning of creation to say there's nothing there, because if you've got nothing, you can't get something from nothing. If you get right back to the very beginning of creation and there's nothing, then how can anything come from nothing? There's nothing at all, then nothing can come from it because there's nothing. So if you go right back, there has to be something. If there's something, that thing has to always have been there. If that thing is always there, it means it's eternal. And how do we recognize something as eternal? We start with our very self. We buy a Bhagavad Gita for $10, we sit down, we read the verse, and you know, we understand, oh yes, you know, there is something eternal, non-changing, transcendental to the material body. A conscious being which is witnessing all states of sleep, wakefulness, and deep sleep. Which has nothing to do with those other states. If they understood that one point, then they would understand that spirit is eternal, and therefore, if we trace out the very, very beginning of creation, that thing that must have always been there must be spiritual. So then, of course, so that would save them billions of dollars, you know. Spend $10 on the Bhagavad Gita and save billions of dollars. And then, of course, the question will come that, you know, what is the nature of spirit? So that then, you know, it can be analyzed that the nature of spirit, you know, there is the Supreme Spirit, and, you know, the universe is, you know, going on by intelligent direction. So that's another point. But the you know, actually signs, you know, from the very beginning of the emergence of science, or you know, steering away from the scriptures like the Shastras. The very beginning of science is really based upon trying to dominate other nations, you know, for trying to, for instance, Srila Prabhupada gives the example that in England, they've always, when they ruled Britain, they always ruled India, they always wanted the Indian culture to seem to be very primitive. To this very day, you know, to this very day, a while ago I looked up the Reader's Digest, what it states about the Aryan culture. And if you read it, so this is the history of Aryan culture, that a group of, because they understand that there was some, you know, they considered there was some knowledge there, so we certainly couldn't, we won't even give that knowledge to the Indian people. That must have been European stock who come in from, you know, some other place, the Aryans. So then they described the Aryans, that they were, you know, sort of tribal people who believed in many, many gods, which is not a fact, because actually Vedic culture believes in one god. It's a monotheistic, actually, Vedic culture. And that, you know, such as Indra, so they give a few, you know, gods. And that they used to indulge in drinking Soma Ras, which was, as I said, most likely some, you know, hallucinogenic mushrooms. So this is a summary, the Reader's Digest summary of Aryan culture to this very day. Not that, you know, you read Srimad Bhagavatam and it describes the absolute highest mood of pure love. Such a high state of pure love for the Supreme Lord. Such highly sophisticated knowledge of the difference between matter and spirit, that so elevated that you know, even the greatest scholars can barely get a foothold into the beginning, you know, of this very advanced knowledge. But you know, there they try to giving this information that, you know, Vedic culture basically sprang from some, you know, drugged out, you know, tribal people imagining all sorts of weird gods and, you know, like this. And so, you know, they never wanted the Indian culture to actually, you know, be seen as something superior. So, for instance, Prabhupada, his, one of his, I think it was his father's friend, Post, I think it was, he had another friend, Maconi, but he actually invented the radio, you know, the wireless, and he mentioned that to this Maconi, who I think may have been Italian or something, European or something, but then he then stole that idea and quickly published it as his own. And to this very day, you know, he is given the credit for, you know, one of the greatest, perhaps, you know, inventions or discoveries. But, you know, in this way, Srila Prabhupada points out, there are many, many, actually, you know, of the, you know, what we do take advantage of in modern science, which actually has some benefit. A lot of it has come from India, and yet there'd be no credit. Similarly, all the, you know, if you take all the proverbs and words of wisdom that come out of, you know, Europe and England, you can trace pretty much 90% of them, 99% of them, back to, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, Chanaka Pandit, and what have you. And they've just been, you know, those poetic words encapsulating so much wisdom had just been slightly changed, you know, into a British way or something like that, and then passed off as their own, so to this very day. And even though history reveals that, oh, this, you know, particular thing doesn't belong to Sir so-and-so of England, it actually belongs to so-and-so from India, they will never, ever publish that. Even when they, you know, if it's freely admitted, they will still never correct. They will still make sure that the children never know the truth, that there could be anything, you know, sophisticated knowledge that comes from, you know, ancient India. So, you know, the moderns and the scientists, they claim to be, you know, purely scientific, you know, just in search of knowledge for the sake of knowledge, but it's anything but that. You know, most scientific advancement is simply used for, you know, so people can have illicit sex without having to worry about, you know, abortions and, you know, childbirth and so many things. You know, intoxication, you know, sophisticated ways for eating, you know, various meat products and, you know, gambling. So many things. Actually, most of modern technology, if you look at it, is used, you know, mostly for sense gratification. And you know, the scientific community, just for instance, when they were saying that they have a tradition that when they send something up to the moon or to Mars or something like that, what they do is the in the control rooms at NASA, they pass around a jar of peanuts, because, and they do this without fail, because, not because they like peanuts, but because they consider it good luck. Yeah. That if they pass around the peanuts, they consider they'll get good luck and the mission will be successful. That's the fact. And, you know, they do it every time without fail. So. But if, you know, someone, you know, speaks something from, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, they'll say, oh, that is superstitious. And actually you will find, if you examine the lives of most of those scientific persons, their lives are absolutely filled with superstitions. You know, baseless superstitions and what have you. But, and, you know, even the very science is supposed to be that knowledge is something that you can observe. You observe it and then you say, yes, this is fact. The sun rises in the east. We say that every morning the sun rises in the east, so it is an observable fact. So, you know, therefore, you know, it can be taken as fact. But that's the very principle. If you, they say, if you can't see it, then we can't accept it. So, you know, you're talking about Krishna, you're talking about Vedic culture. We can't see Krishna, we can't see, you know, Balaram and the Pandavas and what have you. So as far as we're concerned, because we can't see it, it's not a fact. And yet, you know, if you take the theory of evolution, the theory of, you know, the creation of the universe, actually, many, many theories, the majority of basis of the scientific knowledge is based upon theories which have not yet been proven and which are not yet been observable. But they, so therefore, you know, they're actually breaking their own rules, because they're saying, we believe, it's our superstition, it's our belief that, although we have no, you know, facts for it, it's our belief this is the way the universe was, this is the way, you know, we've evolved, this is the way the sun is, this is where the planets are. We believe this, and we're going to spend billions of dollars until we can prove what we believe, which we have no real evidence that is true yet. That's science. But if you present something in the Bhagavad Gita, the hina smitita, the hair, you know, you are a spirit soul, and if you apply your intelligence and see that you're different from the body, they will say, oh no, we can't see the soul. So therefore, it can never be taken as scientific. It can be, you know, written off as something religious, mythical, or what have you, based upon. But because we can't see it, therefore we can't accept it as a science. So therefore, you know, actually, generally, when you see someone who's if they say, you know, here, you know, I'm smoking cigarettes, but that's okay because I'm, you know, in a little bit of anxiety. But anyone else who smokes cigarettes is just a complete fool. You know, if someone said that, you'd think, well, you're a hypocrite. You know, you're a liar, you're a cheat, you're a hypocrite, and especially if you're presenting yourself as a responsible leader, you'd think, you know, you should be dragged down from your post and revealed for being an absolute rascal. But actually, this is the very, you know, the foundation of scientific philosophy, is that they will actually present a whole lot of their superstitious beliefs, which they cannot prove. But if you present the science of that, you know, you're different from the body, they will say, no, we can't accept that, it's not scientific. Therefore, you know, the Bhagavad Gita, as Prabhupada says, you know, many, many times in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, such persons are described as mudha. You know, mudha means they're very foolish. And one who's foolish is pretty much a rascal. They sort of go hand in hand. Because, why is a foolish person a rascal? Because they shouldn't remain foolish. You know? If someone is determined to remain foolish, they're a rascal. You know, if someone is uneducated and, you know, they make the attempt to come to the position of knowledge, then you say, okay, that's that person is intelligent, because even from the very beginning they're trying to come to a point of knowledge. But if someone is uneducated and they say, I will not, you know, accept any knowledge from anyone else, whatever I believe, I will take as knowledge, and I would take anything that I see as confirming what I believe, that person is a rascal. You know, for instance, a huge percentage of the scientific world, though, if you present that Bhagavad Gita states that there is a difference between matter and spirit, this will solve your whole problem of, you know, the creation and geology, and all your sciences will be solved by this one understanding. If you take this one understanding, all your scientific research is finished. All your wasting time and money is finished. That there is a difference between the body and the soul. the body and the soul. And they will say, no, we cannot accept the Bhagavad Gita. So then you ask, well, you know, have you read the Bhagavad Gita? Oh no, we will not read that, that's not scientific. And therefore we say rational. But someone says, you know, we cannot accept the Bhagavad Gita. Well, have you read it? No. Will you read it? No. But then you're a rascal. Not only will I not read the Bhagavad Gita, I will, you know, convince others they should also not read the Bhagavad Gita. So therefore, how will they ever come to the point of knowledge to understand the difference between matter and spirit? So, although they pose themselves as very, you know, people who are actually searching after knowledge, if you try to, you know, give them knowledge free, what they're spending billions of dollars for, what they work their entire life for uselessly, what they have spent generations searching for, a devotee can give them that in about 3 minutes. And they will say, no. Therefore we say they're rascals. You know? The Prabhupada says that it's a dog's obstinacy. And very, very stubborn. You know, how difficult is it to say, you know, sit down with me for 5 minutes, let us discuss just what, alright. You don't have to read the whole Bhagavad Gita. Let us discuss one verse. One verse from the Bhagavad Gita. No. The Hindu Shmita. No. I'll not even discuss one verse. We cannot discuss Bhagavad Gita, it's not scientific. How do you know it's not scientific if you won't read it? That's like the owl, you know. It's completely dark in here. Try opening your eyes. No. There is no sunshine. No, but you just try and open your eyes. You see. No. There's no sunshine. I will not open my eyes. That is the sciences. You know, that's the whole modern science is based upon this. And, you know, they're so easily caught out at every step, actually. Every step. People are so bewildered because, you know, in Kali Yuga, people have, you know, because of the intoxication and, you know, the illusory potency is so strong in Kali Yuga, you know, people have no brain substance left. No, it's a fact. And very difficult for them to, you know, understand anything. They're very, very, you know, sad state of affairs. And that's, you know, so generally we quite often, you know, we will say that the scientific community, where we usually associate them as being Brahmins, or Brahminical, you know, because they're men of knowledge. It's sort of, in one sense, you know, they're supposed to be the intellectuals. It means that they want to use their intelligence, but up until this point, because they're rascals, they haven't. So therefore, they're sutras. So actually, you know, most of the sciences that we usually take as being the, you know, intellectual part of society, in fact, you know, just sutras like everyone else, as Srila Prabhupada says that. You know, because what is the very beginning of Brahminical knowledge? The very beginning of the Brahminical knowledge is that they understand that I'm a spirit soul, I'm not this body. You know, without that, you know, very first step in understanding Brahminical knowledge, how is it possible to be considered intelligent or intellectual? So, here, very, very fortunate, of course, to be able to always take guidance from Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas and not be bewildered by all the bluffing of so many gospel leaders and scientists in this world. And in this way, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, we're able to remain, you know, very, very fixed up at the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, and very happy to you know, celebrate Lord Krishna's appearance day coming up tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada's appearance day coming up on Saturday, and we should all consider ourselves you know, extremely fortunate to be able to take shelter of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Sri Krishna, and feel you know, completely safe you know, on the path you know, out of illusion and on the way back to Godhead. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Yes.
You were talking about that something, you know, cannot come from nothing.
So, yes.
What if an atheist presented you the argument that you cannot prove that nothing, but you cannot prove what nothing is? So how can you prove the whole statement that something came from that nothing, which you don't know what nothing
is? Yeah. Okay. Well. No, we don't have to prove it, because we have Bhagavad Gita. But if you believe it, you prove it. See, our philosophy is proved, so we don't have to prove bogus philosophy. Now, our philosophy, the Hina Shmunyata Dehe, that proves that there's a difference between man and spirit. Now, if someone says that something can come from nothing, let them show me that. Why should we prove it? You know, our philosophy is proved. We don't have to prove bogus philosophies. They're presenting something foolish. As Prabhupada quotes, he says, there's a Bengali saying, because I don't know Bengali, but you know, that there's nothing a goat won't eat, and there's nothing a madman won't say. And you know, people say all sorts of things, so. But, you know, just because a madman says something, oh, you can get so much from nothing. That, you know, my pockets are empty, but, you know, I will buy this beautiful mansion and this beautiful car. My pockets are empty. If that's the case, that something comes from nothing, why is everyone working? Because I'd say, well, I have nothing in my pocket. Oh, well, let's see, you know, so many things come from your nothing. You know. Why are the scientists working so hard? If they believe something can come from nothing, why are they working hard? Because they know that if they have nothing, they'll have to work to, you know, actually, otherwise they'll say. So you say, you know, you're a big scientist. You sit down with nothing, everything will come. Why go to Mars? Why go to Mars? You know, all knowledge will come, all the textbooks will come, everything will come. Everything will come from nothing, so just sit and do nothing. That's their philosophy. But their very actions prove that, you know, the philosophy is completely contradictory. It makes no sense. But if a madman says something like that, why should we have to prove it? You know, madmen say so many things. We don't go round and round trying to, you know, confirm or deny what they say. They're just madmen. We have our Bhagavad Gita, we have Prabhupada, we have Krishna. That's it. And that is proven. Any other questions or comments?
There is a blog to respond to one of the sister. Not from the shop, so sent a letter to the scientists in NASA. So they made a pretty customized dynamic political response, and they flew it around. So what they said is, like, the question was, why are we spending so much money in spite of millions of children do not have a food to give to us? So
So the science is that having a go at the Christians, is that what you're saying?
No, the monk from one of the church sent a letter to the scientist NASA and said that why are you spending so much money?
Why spend so much money when you could feed so many people?
And then in response to that letter, they have made customized answers and rotated the globe around the internet, which is much more convincible to any common man, basically.
Yes, that is because the challenge is coming from the Christians. Yeah, Prabhupada, you know, mentioned in that regard that, you know, they have so much, there is so much mental speculation, so much nonsense that they have put into the Christian philosophy that people just don't accept it, you know. So therefore, if the Christian people challenge, it's not much of a challenge because people think they're pretty foolish anyway. But Prabhupada challenged and people accept. And that is the difference. And, you know, so, you know, as devotees, you know, we should challenge. Because, for instance, I was listening to a morning walk on the way here, and one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples was saying to Prabhupada that, you know, he was speaking with some Christians, and even the priests, you know, they can't understand that there is a spirit soul, you know, there's an eternal spirit soul. They can't understand that, you know. Therefore, they, if you ask, and this disciple Prabhupada asked them, you know, do you understand that there are souls in all living entities, animals and what have you? And they said, no, we can't see that, we can't understand that. Even in humans, you know, the Christians don't believe that even all humans, not every human is supposed to have a soul, that they get a soul, you know, sort of manifest at some stage. They have no real idea of the difference between matter and spirit. As we said, Prabhupada says that if they understand this one point, if they understand the difference between matter and spirit, even by examining just their own nature, it solves all their scientific research. Because all of their scientific research, you know, what comes at the beginning of creation, they can't accept that it's something spiritual because they can't understand the difference between spirit and matter. Therefore, if you say God, you know, or anything, that they won't accept it. As soon as they understand that, you know, there is something spiritual, and they understand those qualities, it's eternal, conscious, and blissful, then they can understand, and then they see that actually what is shown in this world, that whenever there is a living spiritual being, then matter is produced. Life never comes from matter, but matter comes from life. So once they understand spirit, they'll understand matter comes from life. Therefore, at the beginning of creation, what happened? Matter came from life. See? That's what we perceive every single day. That's proven. You can prove that every single day. You can prove it just by your own existence. Now, our philosophy is proven. It's not faith. Matter actually is produced when there's something living. Life is never produced from matter. Therefore, you ask the question, what happened at the beginning of creation? That there was life and it produced matter. See? Now, because they cannot understand that one point, and the Christians and the religious movements around the world, they also don't understand, even the priests. Therefore, how can they challenge? But we can challenge because we understand that principle. See? And therefore, we should. No, actually, there was so many medicine that means that they haven't read, you know, everything was there. Like, we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, There were cities, you know, there were chariots and horses and gardens and flowers and herbs. I was just studying over the last couple of days, actually during the Abhishek, there were some things we don't usually do, which I want to do to some degree. Krishna has certain types of herbal baths. He actually has three herbal baths. And there are particular mantras. Now, these mantras are thousands of years old, and they describe, you know, these wonderful herbs and their wonderful qualities, medicinal qualities. So how can we say, you know, the scientists would tell you, yes, previously there was no medicine, right? But if you read the Vedas, it says, yes, there were so many herbal medicines. How long has Janmashtami been, being celebrated? As far back in time as you can go, there's Janmashtami. And in Janmashtami, they offer these medicinal herbal baths to Krishna. So how can we say that there's no medicine? See? So therefore, for us, we don't, just by associating with Krishna and his scripture, everything is, there. And they will speak so much nonsense. And what have they done? What have the scientists done? Look at the state of the world. It's a mess. I don't think there's anyone would challenge that. If you say, this world is in a mess since, technology and industrialization, even the scientists won't challenge that. Oh, but we're going to fix it. Yeah, okay. But what have they done? Anyway, any other comments or questions? Yep.
Ramanand wrote the medicine for Lakshman, which can be revived almost. That story is not true, but the point is, they have the medicines which they can revive almost a dead man. And we can know, and Shukracharya had the mantras which they could revive the dead man. Stories
of the dead soldiers, he revived them by chanting mantras. Mm-hmm.
So
that's
today's medicine can't go to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
And then
you have
the
Brahmin
healing, isn't that?
There's so much evidence. It's sheer nonsense. I mean, it's a real blatant lie of a very corrupt person to pose himself as a scientist and say there's no medicine in the past.
Actually,
but most people believe that.
Today they make so poisonous medicines that destroy everything. Their only purpose is to earn money out of that medicine.
Oh, yeah.
But it's so detrimental. We have millions of examples, and the biggest cause for that in America, the third cause or fourth, is from the misapplication of the drug.
How do we reach to a smart person?
If they can understand the difference between matter and spirit, then all other realizations will come and all their nonsense will be immediately revealed as ignorance. If they can understand that one thing, all their foolishness will stop. They just understand that one thing, the difference between matter and spirit. They can just understand that. So we, speak to them on that platform. And we, if we want to speak or challenge or have discussions with the scientific community, we should, try and just be fixed up in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would be walking with his disciples and they would ask a question. And then they might say something, and he would, although, they've obviously studied Bhagavad Gita, but he would say, aren't you reading Bhagavad Gita? He would question, why would you say such a thing? This is all in Bhagavad Gita. What to speak is from a Bhagavatam, like that. Practically everything we need to know is just there in the Bhagavad Gita. But actually, who's reading Bhagavad Gita? That's the problem. Who's actually properly studying Bhagavad Gita? If we don't study Bhagavad Gita, we shouldn't challenge the scientists. Srila Prabhupada made that comment also, that don't preach if you're not qualified. I mean, we can preach, but according to our qualifications. But we shouldn't challenge, you know, persons who are, you know, quite lofty in their word juggling, scientific knowledge, or, you know, philosophical knowledge, if we actually haven't properly studied, you know, Bhagavad Gita or what have you, because then it can actually, you know, make the movement look foolish, you know, because they're very tricky. So if we want to preach, we should actually study properly. Study means, you know, we hear from Srila Prabhupada, we and read his books and hear his lectures and hear from his disciples and followers. You know, just that one book, become completely fixed up in the Bhagavad Gita. Then you can challenge anyone without even the slightest doubt and without the slightest fear. But if you've not properly done that, you just be a little careful. First, we actually have to challenge it. We have to. Our first challenge is to our own self. Why am I not, you know, surrendering everything to Krishna? You know, when we, you know, when we're convinced that yes, I should actually be Krishna's devotees and give up all my nonsense, then we can convince other people. You should also, you know, come to Krishna and give up your nonsense.